The text, the holy text on which our teacher based much of his instruction, is called the Bhagavad Gita. Now, one of the verses of chapter 2 says, in rough translation, when you begin to pass beyond the tangle of illusions, you will get averse to. Our teacher sometimes said, you will get sick of all that you've been told and all that they're going to tell you. The tangle of words. And then you will turn away from words. You will bring your mind within. And then you will bring it to a stationary, unmoving concentration called samadhi. This is in verse 52. And two verses later, the disciple Arjuna asks, well, what is this man like who has brought his mind to steadiness and who is practicing samadhi? That last phrase often gets left out. They just say, what is he like, the man who has brought his mind to steadiness? But he says, and he's practicing samadhi. Then there's a tangle. The words form a tangle. Because they form a chain of associations. Just as we can't do a simple action. In Zen they say, yes, it's to eat when you're hungry and rest when you're tired. But people don't eat when they're hungry. They don't just eat when they're hungry. They eat and they're boiling with thoughts of revenge or jealousy or spite or inertia or resentment or what they're going to do, where they've come from, where they're going to. And they don't just lie down and sleep. When they do get to sleep, after all those thoughts, they start dreaming about where they've come from, where they're going to, what they should have said, and all those things. So the thing is to cut down the thoughts and cut down the words. Our teacher said, I beg you to use as few words as possible. Now, for instance, words form a tangle. We're given a single sentence. Practice contentment with things as they are. But that gets tangled up, and that's red. Don't try and change anything. Be content with things as they are. But that's not what is said. If you're building a little wall, you lay three rows of bricks in the evening and then you're tired. Now you've laid the three rows of bricks. You're content with that. You've done it well. But it doesn't mean you're not going to lay some more bricks. To be contented doesn't mean to leave things as they are. It doesn't mean you shouldn't go on to something else. And in this way, words form a tangle and they attract other words and other feelings. Then one can get drunk on words. People can say, the morning. All efforts at yoga are simply assertions of egoism. It stands to reason. We are in illusion. We are given instructions on yoga. But because we are in illusion, we are ruled by egoism. So we shall perform the instructions on yoga in a spirit of egoism. So we shall be strengthening egoism, the very thing that yoga is meant to uproot. So it's a great mistake to do any practice of yoga at all. We should leave everything to the great cosmic spirit. And the example sometimes given like little kittens, which make no effort, they just hang from the mouth of the mother as she lifts them to the more desirable place. But those people are drunk on words. And quite soon when they finish saying that, they start making breakfast. And somebody says to them, but surely you're not going to make breakfast. Wouldn't that be an assertion of egoism? That would be your individuality, wouldn't it? Shouldn't you be just waiting for the cosmic power to feed you? Well, then the people who've been drunk on words sober up very quickly. And they say, well, you've got to be a bit practical, you know. Words can have power. In a book just out, there's an account of an operation for extracting wisdom tooth. Well, one of the effects is it's extremely painful. After the operation, there's a big swelling, and as a result of that, quite often, it's impossible to close the mouth by reaction. Now, they've been experimenting with various ways to try and reduce these consequences. One of them was to use ultrasound produced by a machine. Well, they tried in various ways, but just to read the conclusion of one experiment he gives.
Next, they tested whether the massage was having the effect and trained the patients to massage themselves in the way the doctor moved the machine. This self-administered massage had no effect. Up to this point, they had shown a typical placebo effect, in which a doctor in a white coat massaging the face with an impressive machine had a marked effect, irrespective of whether the machine was turned on or not. Furthermore, there was no effect if the patient applied the machine. The pain was reduced by doctor-applied treatment. They went further. The swelling of the face was markedly reduced, and the ability to open the mouth was improved. This placebo effect was the same as that of a substantial dose of anti-inflammatory steroid. The reason for choosing this example from many is that the effect was not only on the pain, which unthinking dualists would say is only mental, but also on the swelling and on the muscle spasm. Evidently, this placebo response required a doctor in a white coat with an impressive machine. And this combination improved not only the patient's subjective report, but two objective signs of inflammation that are usually assigned to mechanical body processes.
One of the things he says there is that with all analgesics, the expectation of the patient is a big factor in the final effect. And he also says that when the attention is drawn to the pain by a negative suggestion, this is terrible, it makes the pain worse. And he says all these painful situations are either made better or worse by the way our mind attends to them, and that the best remedy for them is distraction of the mind.